continuation of the interview with Maria Laredo on March 27th, 2001.
Okay. Well, so anyway, as I work here, I've been just trying to figure out just my life, you know, why am I here? And so I'm mainly here to speak for the people, my people, and to try to voice their concerns, you know, because they don't speak the language. And the things that I see, you know, if I see, people living, like even yesterday when I went to one of the camp, which I don't know if I should call it a camp, but I went to one of the sites that my staff has been visiting.
And what's your position here?
I'm the health service director.
At this time?
At this time. And I am in charge of community service activities. I'm in charge of outreach, transportation, translation, referrals, home visiting, prenatal classes and other classes that are done here in the clinic.
And so you do get out to the camps?
So I do get out to the camps.
And you were just out yesterday.
And so. I was out just yesterday because one of my staff, several of my staff weren't here, and the person that was going by herself, so I decided to go with her, said who was part of, anyway, that I wanted to go. So I went with her, and I visited this site where these three men or four men are living under a bridge. And so my staff has tried to take him out of there, say, you know, get out of here and go to one of the camps or one of the cabins or something, and they don't want to because they have no place else to go, and they feel that this man that put them there because he's going to give him work. So they're living under this bridge, their little place where they're staying is covered by canvas, and so they have this room that's covered by canvas, and then another little room, sorry, a little shed, not even a shed, just boards, that is their little kitchen where they cook their food with wood. And they had no cooking utensils. They were cooking with coffee tins and heating their water and opening their cans and stuff. So when I went with her, they had gotten a couple of pants from my staff. They had gotten some clothes, but they still didn't have enough. They said they were only working 1 day or 2 days a week, and were barely buying their own food. So they wanted a car, wanted to have access, see if they could buy a car. They wanted to get another job. They wanted to see if I could get them a pair of socks, because they had no socks, and they wanted some pants. So I talked to my staff today, and we were making arrangements. We took him some food yesterday. And then we're talking about how we're gonna get him close so that they can have that, because it's getting, as you can see, the weather, how bad the weather is today. So I kept thinking about them and how they live, and so I wondered if we ever lived like that, my family. And we did. We didn't live in made up shifts, you know, made up houses or by cabins, but we did live in a garage. We did live in an old house, and we lived in barracks. So, you know, we have lived the life, but I don't think, you know, at least because I was younger, I didn't feel it, you know, as I feel it now. Mm-hmm. Because I think as your kids, you don't see the world around you. You only see this little thing, and you play and you work and you play and you work, and that's all you do. So you never see it as what's hurting other people or what's hurting you, because it's not hurting you at that time because you don't feel it, mm-hmm. you know. And as a kid, you don't feel it, but as you get older, you do. So, you know, I think that... like for this man that are there, I talked to my staff, and they say, I mean, we can't move them out because they're not gonna move out, so we have to help them survive, and they're comfortable there, you know, and so we're just gonna have to make them more comfortable until they get more work and get out of there, because that's the only way they're gonna get out of there, only they have more work. So I left him my number, and I left him my staff number, and I told him to call me, because they had calling cards. And so they bought calling cards, and they said they would call us, because they were only like probably a mile from the phone, so they would walk over to the phone to call us if they need anything. So I'm hoping that would be the connection we have with them, and that we're going to keep going over there until we can get them out. Mm-hmm. So I just think it's just part of my job to be here, and so I encourage my staff and encourage other staff. I do a lot of the cultural training here too, in the clinic. For our cultural competency program, I'm in charge of talking about the clinic, about migrant health, about my life, because I think people relate to better if they hear other people's stories. So I talked to all new staff about Virginia Garcia, who she was. I talk about myself. I talk about the clinic and how it got established. And I just talk about culture and why you have to be sensitive to people and migrant workers, and what is a migrant worker, and why they're here. So that's just another part of the work that I do to every single person that comes through here. So mm-hmm. So that's mainly what part of my job is.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if you can tell me just a little bit about the history of the clinic, since you've known about it. I mean, since you've worked here. I mean, you mentioned already that you started when it was just in the
infancy,
in the garage,
in the garage,
or whatever,
yes,
the place that was going to be used as the automotive repair shop.
Yeah, it was.
Uh-huh. And so you've seen it grow a lot over uh-huh. the years. Can you tell me just kind of what some of the major turning points were for the clinic?
For the clinic, yes. Well, let me tell you a little bit about
what you were doing at that time.
Yeah.
Too.
Well, the clinic, I came in 1977. The clinic had started 2 years before, in 1975, with the death of Virginia Garcia. And Virginia Garcia was a young girl who came to Oregon with her parents, about 6 years old, and developed an infection in California, and then came to Oregon. And her parents took her to a doctor or a clinic, and she went back to the cabin. She lived in the North Plains, one of the Tankersley's camp, and she got worse, and so they took her to the hospital, and she died. So with her death, the Hispanic community at that time, who were ex-migrant workers, wanted to do more, and felt that with her death. And at that same time, they wanted medical services for migrant workers, but they didn't know how to get them. So with her death, they went to the commission and talked to the commission in Washington County, and told them the story of Virginia Garcia and how she died.
And some of the circumstances were that she didn't get medical care as properly as she would have
if there had been bilingual staff, mm-hmm. if the parents were able to speak English. If there had been outreach workers out there to get her out of there sooner. So there was a lot of reasons for her death. So the commission, Jose Garcia, there might be another person you want to talk to, he's in Salem. Jose Garcia spoke very eloquently about the need for healthcare for migrant workers. And so the commission gave the go ahead to have this clinic. So Centro Cultural at that time had this little 3-car garage on the side. And said, I have this place that I was going to use for automotive repairs, for migrant workers to learn how to fix their cars. Why don't you go ahead and use it as a clinic? So the clinic got, the little 3-car garage got remodeled, and a clinic was built. I mean, almost with overnight, because Virginia Garcia died in June 19th, 1975. And the clinic started in July, late July. So it was really quick. I mean, a really quick turnaround for the clinic to start. And one of the stories that I hear about the starting date was that the clinic opened this Saturday because everything was fixed. So they had this grand opening with this clinic. And then they opened the clinic, and there was no electricity and no water. They forgot to turn the water and the electricity on. So they had to call the city, and the city had to turn everything on. So it was one of the stories that you hear after a couple of years that you've been here. So the clinic opened, the Sisters of Providence of St. Vincent, Centro Cultural, a lot of the community people, Hispanic community people, just put all the efforts into getting the workers in for healthcare. There was a bus that went by and picked up people and bring them to the clinic. There was a van that went out to provide services out in the camps. So there was a lot of activity to get the services, medical services. It closed. September came and it closed. It was just a 3-month thing, clinic closed. So then the planning started again to try to get a clinic open again. And so the clinic opened again in 1976, again for 3 months. And then at that time, they decided they wanted to keep the clinic longer, to expand the hours and expand the days so that it was open year round. So in 1977, when I came in, the clinic was already part of Salud Medical Center in Woodburn. And as we were a satellite clinic of Salud Medical Center. And so as satellite clinic, we had a clinic manager here, and the executive director was in Woodburn. there were a lot of problems with the executive director and the board of Salud Medical Center. I guess the needs of a satellite clinic were different than the needs of Salud Medical Center, because Salud Medical Center was a big clinic. And so they always kept cutting money or cutting budget or not cutting staff. And so by 78, when I came into work, they were already part, but they were already talking about separating, not being part of Salud Medical Center. And so they somehow it was decided that we would get our own, apply for our own grant. The clinic would get our own, apply for our own status as a 501c3, which is a charitable clinic, and have our own executive director. So by 1979, we became our own incorporated. So we became Virginia Garcia Memorial Health Center Incorporated. And as an incorporation, we got our own executive director, Cipriano Salazar, and our own board of directors. And so as an executive director, then we got a financial director. And so as soon as the executive director came in, he said, we need to move out of Centro. We were still in the little three-car garage. He was over at the house, in one of the offices that Centro had, because Centro at that time had different offices for different groups of agencies, like Ayuda and OHDC, you know, working with different parts of the organization. So then they looked at this lot here where we're at now, which was the Hank's house, and so they bought the lot and the house, and so the house got remodeled and changed it to a clinic, and so we moved in 1980-81 into this site.
And how was the money raised for this building?
For this building, it was
purchase it?
Probably it was I think it was part of it was federal funds, and part of it was state blood grant funds, and so the money was given to buy the site. We're still paying. We're not paying anymore, I think, but so we bought the site. So we moved in. Within 6 months, we had run out of space. It's amazing. I mean, you go from a little three-car garage to this big house that had a lot of rooms, but we still needed more space. So we continue working. We added another site, another place, which was this site where we're sitting right now. There was a garage, so the garage got remodeled, and I don't think where I'm sitting right now there was nothing. Where you and I are sitting, there's nothing. There was a hallway that was between the house and another big garage over on the side. Where you're sitting, that wall was a garage. So this part was a little hall outside, just a little patio that was sort of hanging out. And so we continue providing services to, you know, primary care services to migrant workers. And then we started providing services to all the community, so anybody that needed health care, especially pregnant women. We were doing a lot of prenatal care. And so we got a lot of, we started applying for funds. We got funds through Meyer Trust to provide a new program, prenatal program. So we ran that one. Then we hired an OB doctor. So she came and started doing all our deliveries, and then she left. It was like she came for 3 years and then she left, and she left with all these mothers and babies. And so we needed to do more prenatal care. So then we hired doctors that would do deliveries, and so we started doing that. And as we started hiring more staff, we had like probably about 15 to 20 staff when we moved in here. Now we have 100. So you know how big we've gotten. So we added, and then around that same time, our executive director left, Cipriano Salazar left, and we hired Jose Rodriguez, who's another director. He was from Texas. Very nice. All of them have been very good directors. All the directors have come through. Some of them have their problems, but most of the time they really work for the mission. So Jose Rodriguez came and he changed a lot of the...
And this was approximately what year?
That was approximately 83, 82. Okay. So he came, and at that time we had two buildings separate. We had the house, which was now the clinic, and then we had the administrative building, which is that side of the wall where you're at. So that was administration. And then we added, we had family planning, federal family planning program. And then we had that program for a couple of years, and then that left, also because of funding. And then we added our parenting program. No, not yet. We still were working on prenatal. And then Jose Rodriguez left, like in 85, 86, when my daughter, no, when my daughter was born. So like I measured with all my births, not only have two, in 83. So he only came in for 2 years or 3 years and then he left. So he left in 83. And then Jim Zaleski, who at that time had been here since 1977 because he was the clinic manager, but was working in outreach and was running the family planning clinic. And so he was doing a lot of those jobs as director of different programs. So he and I became sort of intern directors until they hired a director. And so Jim Zaleski applied. I didn't apply because I had two small children. I had a 1 year, 1.5 year old and a 3 month old. And I just felt I couldn't be a good executive director if I had two small children. So I didn't apply. I just said I would work with whoever came through. So Jim Zaleski got the job, and he is in Forest Grove. So he became the director. And so we continued providing services. We hired more doctors, more nurses. And then Jim Zaleski, around 1988, 89, also decided to leave. And then we hired, was 89 or 90 probably. So then again, we were in turmoil because we had no executive director for another year. So the medical director became executive director, Dr. Macklem, and between the financial director and the executive director, they became the executive director, the intern executive director. And then Millie Lane was hired. Who's now leaving in April, but she became our executive director. And around that time, we had a parenting program that was funded through Meyer Trust again. So Meyer Trust gave us about $300,000 to do this parenting program in Spanish, a bilingual curriculum. So we developed the curriculum. We did surveys, and so we had our own curriculum for parenting. So then the funding went out for that one too, and then we revised it in 93. We decided that we really wanted to have this program. So I applied for small funds to run the program and then hired a parent educator, and so we still have it. And we have been running this program it started in 89 through Meyer Trust, and then it's for 3 years, and then we had to cut it off because we had no funds for it. Then we started up again in 93 using the same curriculum, which is what we're doing still right now. So it's a parenting program for high-risk parents who are in risk for child abuse. So then around that time, when Millie Lane came in, the little house on the side that you see there, right here on the same block, the lady that lived in it gave it to us at a really low cost. I don't know how much it cost, but it was really low. So we went ahead and bought it. And then right before that, the parking lot that you see now used to be Hank's store, and Hank offered it to us, that block, also at a very low cost. So we bought that and tore down the building and made it into a parking lot. So we were sort of been buying all around us, as you can see. And we started getting seen a lot more people, so we hire more staff. We've been remodeling ever since. I mean, and we've been adding parts to this clinic that you wouldn't believe. I don't think we can add any more. And then we moved into McMinnville, Yamhill. We have a clinic over there. We also started doing the same thing, having a van out there, seeing people 2 days a week and doing outreach. And then we moved into the health department, and then we from there we moved over to got our own site, and now we have a clinic in Yamhill. And then around a couple of years ago, we got a clinic. We have OB. We've been doing OB, like I told you, for a long time. Our OB practice has really grown. The community needed. There used to be a Healthy Start clinic that also saw OB, but that one was closing, so we needed to figure out a way to get the Healthy Start women together with our women. So we combined, we worked with Quality Hospital and got a clinic in Hillsborough to do OB only. So we have a clinic over there to see pregnant women and do their prenatal care, and then the doctors deliver across the street. And so we now have a clinic there. a year before that, we opened our dental clinic over in the corner that also it's all paid for. We got all different kinds of funds, blood grant and a lot of grants that we got, and so it's all paid for. And we have one dentist. We're hiring another dentist in a couple months. That other dentist is coming. So altogether, the clinic has really expanded and grown. We just bought the bar, who's Harry's bar, last year, and that bar is going to be torn down once we go into our expanding. We are really working in expanding our services, and we don't know if this building is going to be here in the next. Probably, and if you come back in about 6 or 7 years, we'll probably have a whole new building here. At least that's the thought we have. Mm-hmm. We also might have another clinic in Hillsboro. Uh-huh. So it's just, I think we're growing with the clinic.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's a great success story, actually.
Yes, very successful. At least I think we have. And you know, we have had our ups and downs. We have had problems. But I think we grow with that problem. You know, you learn from your mistakes and you learn from problems that you have. And once you learn that, you don't do it again, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, so I think that's how the clinic has been. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you look at the clinic and you look at Virginia Garcia, the young girl, and you look, I think we're the age that we should be, you know, developing and expanding, you know, sort of growing with the need. But we're growing with the need. We're not just growing because we want to. Mm-hmm. We're growing with the need because there's a lot of need here in Washington County.
Sure.
Yeah.
Annie, you mentioned that the clinic's had its problems. It hasn't been all uphill. Were there any that were, like, really big, serious problems that threatened the clinic's existence over the years, or any that stand out in your mind as notable?
And I don't know if there were. I think that there were some problems when we had several times we had to get together and decide what we were going to do. Mm-hmm. Time when the HMOs came in, what was it? Probably about 6 years ago, when it was decided that the state of Oregon went into the Oregon Health Plan, the OHP plan. We had to put ourselves together, and we laid off like 5 people because we knew that we were not going to get the same kind of funding we were getting before when we were billing our own Medicaid services, because we were going to go through HMOs. Mm-hmm. And so that was a crisis because, I mean, people got laid off and people were gone. A pediatrician, a medical assistant, a front office, everybody, every department had a cut. And so that was very hard for us, you know, as a clinic, because we never want to lay off people. But we had to do that just to survive, because if we hadn't done that, we wouldn't have survived.
Now, let me see if I understand that correctly. So you were billing for services.
We were billing
to Medicaid directly.
To Medicaid directly. And then when the Oregon Health Plan came through, we had to become part of an HMO. Uh-huh. And as part of an HMO, you get capitated rate. And capitated rate is not enough for us as a clinic to survive because we were getting more through the Medicaid reimbursement.
I see.
And that happens to almost all the providers in the area. I mean, all the medical providers had to decide if we go cap. You know, most of the time, HMOs are supposed to work. If you look at it, you get $20 a month for me, $20 a month. My doctor gets $20 a month. If I don't go in at all, he makes the money, right? Because I don't go in, so he doesn't see me, and so he makes money. But if I go in every single month, once a month, or if I go in 4 times a month, he's going to have a problem because he's seeing me and not getting paid anymore because right. He's seeing for the same thing. The same thing happens to us because our patients have a lot more medical problems and more extended problems. Even a normal cold turns to pneumonia or bronchitis because they don't come in. So by the time they come in, you have to see them 3 or 4 times. And so whatever money we get is not worth the money, you know, when we see them. A lot of our families really bad, you know, cancer or diabetes, and so they end up getting a lot more visits. You know, average visit right now, average visit that a regular person should have is at 2.5 visits per year. That's normal. If nothing happens to you, that's normal. For us, it's almost at 4.6 for every single. If you look at the number of people that we see and the number of visits that we have, it's 4.6 visits per year
per person,
mm-hmm. which is double the amount that it should be.
Now, you told me on the phone before we got together today this story about how your own life intersected with Virginia
with
Garcia,
Virginia Garcia
years later. You want to
Oh, yeah, I can tell you.
That?
Yeah, let me tell you. I hope I can do it briefly.
It doesn't have to be briefly.
That's not briefly. Okay. Well, one of the things that...
Maybe it does for you.
Yeah. One of the things that that has brought me full circle, as I told you before, was in 1996, my brother... It's already been 5 years. I can't believe it. Time goes by so fast. My brother decided... my younger brother, the one that I told you that left the family when the crisis happened, when my dad died, decided that he wanted to bring my father back. Because we, when my father died, we buried him here in Independence. Then a year later, we sent him to Texas. We digged him up and sent him to Texas. Because we thought we were going to go back to Texas. I mean, all of us thought we're going to end up back in Texas and we want to have him close to us. We never went back. None of us, not even my stepmother, went back. So my brother called and said, I'm going to get my father, my dad back. And I said, how? And he said, well, I'm going to just go and get his casket and bring him over. And he said, I'm going to get a U-Haul, which I thought it was so funny. He said, I'm going to get a U-Haul, and I'm going to put him in the U-Haul, and then come and bury him here. He said, I'm going to do it with your agreement or without it. He said, I'm just letting you know what I'm doing. And if you want to help, you can. And so I thought about it, and so I said, okay, I'll help you. So I gave him some money. But then I talked to him, and I said, you know, U-Haul is not going to work. How can you carry a coffin all the way from Texas in a U-Haul? I said, why don't you think about flying? And then his wife said, yeah, let's look at flying. So they decided to bring him over by flying so he would go, because they made some arrangements. They were able to figure out what the cost was going to be, and the cost was going to be about the same. So he said, well, they're just flying him over. So my brother went to Texas and talked to my stepmother, talked to all the family members, and everybody agreed that it was okay. So he went back to Texas and was digging up. There was a man there digging up my dad's grave. And it was very hot. My brother said it was very hot, because at that time it was very hot. So the man was digging, and he was frustrated, and you know, he was getting mad because he was just digging. And this man, and then when he got closer to the coffin, as he lifted the coffin broke, because he was already, you know, 20-some years old. So the coffin broke completely, and there was nothing. It was all dust and bones and stuff. So my brother had to make a decision, and so he had to call my stepmother and say, what are we going to do? Do we put the remains in a coffin, or do we get cremated? And so while he was waiting for her decision, he was talking to the guy that was digging out the grave, and so the man that was digging out the grave felt bad because the coffin broke, and so he started talking to my brother and said, well, you were taking him to Oregon. And my brother goes, yeah, I'm taking him back. You know, that's where all the family is. And so the man said, well, you know, I've been to Oregon. And my brother goes, you have? And he said, yeah, we were there, but we had a disaster. So disaster. And my brother goes, why? And he said, well, we were there and my sister-in-law died. My little sister-in-law died. And my brother turns around and says, Virginia Garcia? Just a question. And he goes, yes. And then my brother said, which is just amazing. He said, the man couldn't believe that my brother knew Virginia Garcia. So the man says, yeah, she's my sister-in-law, my little sister-in-law who died, you know, in Oregon in a little place named Hillsborough. And then my brother goes, yeah, Hillsborough, and he lived in a place called Norte something, and my brother goes, North Plains. So he was finishing everything. So the man said, yeah, and then my brother said, well, my sister has been looking for her grave in Hillsborough, because, you know, they told her she was buried there, and so my sister once in a while goes to the graveyard and looks around and can't find her, and she said, well, no, she's buried here. And my brother goes, where? And, you know, here in Mission. And so my brother goes, where? And he goes, right here, 500, I mean, it's like right around the corner here. And my brother said it was only like 100 yards or 200 yards away from where my father was buried.
In the same cemetery.
And so my brother was just amazed by the coincidence of everything, you know. And so he said, you know, how about her parents, you know, your relatives? And they said, he said, well, they're here too. I mean, they live right here in Mission, Texas. And so my brother went and met them and talked to them and visited with them. they had an album of her with all her pictures of her and newspaper articles about the clinic, and then it stopped. And so my brother said, "Well, haven't you gotten anything?" And they said, "Well, we haven't gotten anything anymore." And so my brother goes, "Well, now you are, you know."
Hold on for one second.
Yeah. Yeah. So then my brother said, "Well, I'll tell my sister that, you know, tell my sister about you and tell her everything." And so my brother called me when he got back and said, I got the remains. We got my father cremated, and I'm setting up all these things for the funeral, another funeral." He said, "But you can't believe what I found." And I said, "What?" "Well, there was this man." So he was telling me, and I said, "Virginia Garcia?" And he goes, "Yes." And I said, "I can't believe that." And he goes, "Neither can I." So it was like this story. And the other thing, that the family, now I write to the family once a year. You know, I send them everything that I know about the clinic. Every article that's done, I send it to them. And they're in Florida right now. They're migrating, still moving around, but they're in Florida. And then they went back to Texas. And so one of the things that I have now realized is that somehow the circle has been completed, somehow. That, you know, Virginia Garcia died in 1975 in June 19th. I moved out of my house June 19th, 1975. I mean, if you can believe that, I couldn't, because I started going back and looking. That was Father's Day that day, and I always remember it because it was Father's Day. That I moved out. Remember I told you that I had moved out? But it was that same day that Virginia Garcia died, that I moved out of the house, and my whole life changed just because of that decision. Because if I had stayed at home with my stepmother, I would still be there.
Yeah, you wouldn't be in that chair.
I wouldn't be in this chair. I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. I wouldn't be talking to you, because I would be another person completely different from what I am today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is rather remarkable.
Remarkable, you can say it is. You can say it is.
Just another follow-up question. Mm-hmm. Have you ever reconciled with your stepmother?
I haven't reconciled with her. It's funny because when I go back and I talk to my sister, lives in Salem. My brother lives in Independence, close to where she lives. My other brother lives in Albany. None of them talk to her. Mm. And every time I go back, I ask if she has died, which I shouldn't ask, but it's just a question that I ask. I do ask about her, mm-hmm. but only in that manner. And I don't want to be like that, but I think that that the problems we had, whatever that was too hurtful, mm-hmm. that I cannot reconcile yet. Though I have talked to different people, and everybody has told me that I have to reconcile, because that's going to free me. And I'm going to try to do that at one time, but I'm not ready for that yet. I'm thinking of writing a letter to her and saying, "You did this, you hurt me, you did this, and I forgive you," mm-hmm. which I think I have. I think I've forgiven her, because I can talk about her with no malice at all, you know. But I think that I have not been able to really forgive her yet. You know, it's like you have this little thing back in the back of your mind, and you always want to be able to reconcile, but I'm always afraid of reconciling with her, because I'm afraid of going back to the same thing,
same pattern.
And I don't want that. I think that's why I have always held back, because at some point I think that she tried to reconcile and I didn't want to, because I felt that I was going to be pulled back into the same pattern, uh-huh. be pulled back into the same world that I was in before, and I couldn't do that anymore. And I couldn't do that to my children. I didn't want my children to go through that. And so I just said, I don't think I can deal with her. All my brothers don't talk to her. All my younger brothers, who are her children, are also left the home without, in a really good manner. You know, they all had to run away from home,
uh-huh.
because she would never let go in uh-huh. in a decent fashion. Uh-huh. So all of them had to leave,
uh-huh.
you know, either in an argument or in a fight or something, because she would never allow them to leave in another way.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
that's too bad.
That is bad, and you know, and I do think about it. You know, not all the time, but I do think about it, and I talk to my kids about it, and I talk to my husband about it, and my husband sort of says, "It's up to you. Whenever you're ready, you know, I'll go with you." And I just said, "I don't think I'm ever going to be ready." You know, yeah. I have seen her. I met her. I mean, I have seen her and gone to several different, like the day that my father was buried. You know. When my brother came back,
right.
she was there,
uh-huh.
and I did see her, and I did talk to her, you know, but I did not reconcile.
Mm-hmm.
And there were other occasions when one of my younger brothers got married. I went to that. She was there. But it was just that, very civil, but no, not the way we were before.
Yeah.
Because I think it's too hard to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I want to thank you very much.
Oh, I know, I think it went a long time.
But I also throw out, is there anything else that we haven't talked about that you'd like to?
Oh, I don't think so. I think I talked too much. I think I just told you all my life story, probably.
Well, that's what we're here for.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I want to thank you very much,
Maria. You're welcome.
This, I think, is a great interview, and definitely gives us some important history here about the clinic and about the community, too. So
yeah.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay.